Yes, you should. Yeah, the other thing to be able to pull up is the final statement on the finance that we submitted. That one we need first. There's only two of them, and one of them is the document I just said to pull up. The other one we don't need a document for. Yes, when you finish getting the document ready, can you start keeping track of attendance? We're already 10 minutes late for an ALEC start of the session, and we need more.
Mic on.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. And if we can start the recording or any other procedures we need to do. I won't say make sure we have remote people on Adobe Connect. Could ask if we have anyone remotely on the bridge, but I suspect the answer is no. Are we ready to go? That's a yes? Thank you. The first item on our agenda is to vote to votes or decisions of the ALAC. Our formal rules require us to, number one, have quorum, number two, have a representative from every region. We do not have a representative from Lac Rallo here because they're all involved in another event. We will be using the rule, however, that for non-essential, for votes that don't need an answer immediately, we will be giving people the opportunity to vote after the close of the formal decision. Do I have the general agreement in violation of our rules to proceed with this without Lac Rallo? Thank you. Let the record show that nobody disagreed with that decision. We don't need a formal decision.
Question: Javier Rujavet, for the record, does Lac Rallo know about this?
I don't know.
Okay.
But they do know there is actions taking place today. We were in error that we didn't point out that they should have someone in the room temporarily. But I don't believe that either of these decisions are such that we'll have a problem with it.
Can we say they were constructively notified because it's somewhere in some wiki or some?
We can.
Okay.
The first item on the agenda is the confirmation of Barack Otieno as our CCNSO liaison. To recall the background, he was selected many months ago as the candidate to work with Maureen for transition. My understanding is that process has been carried out with great success. His long-standing involvement in the CCNSO, and the CCNSO is happy to accept him. And I would like to formally recommend that the ALAC confirm him as our liaison. Discussion, Olivier.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. I'm in receipt of an email in the ALAC internal list which mentions that please note, tomorrow the ALAC will act on two decisions. The email was sent today, so I'm a little confused as to whether it will be tomorrow or today. It's today. Okay.
Sorry about that. My
Olivier,
fault.
May I ask who sent it? It may have been me. I don't remember.
Evan.
Me. I sent a draft yesterday, and it was approved just moments ago. So the draft still had the wording tomorrow. My apologies.
That is my fault for not having approved the draft, and Evan's fault for not changing that word. So we take joint responsibility for the error. Does anyone have a problem and would like to postpone this decision till tomorrow because of it? I see no indications. We both beg your forgiveness. Do you accept our request? Do you forgive us, Olivier?
Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. I'm not mandated to take such an action.
In fact, he's not an ALAC member, so...
Correct, that's not being an ALAC member. I'm not mandated to emit any opinion of any sort on this issue. Thank you. I was just pointing out the message, that's all.
We're still asking for your forgiveness. I think he doesn't forgive us. We'll have to live with it. Yeshim.
Thank you. Yeshim Nazar speaking. Please don't forget to state your names before speaking. Thank you.
For the record, the previous interchange was largely between me and Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, me being Alan Greenberg. We have a request to speak from Javier.
Javier Rojavet, for the record. So is that email the notice that Rallo has? So they think there's two decisions tomorrow.
I doubt if any of them saw that email because they're busy in a session right now. We have had ALAC actions on the agenda published several, well, a week or two ago. And we will be, and Heidi mentioned it, and we will be giving them an opportunity to vote. If anyone would like to rescind this and request us to go on to this tomorrow, we certainly can do that. Is there any further discussion? Kylie.
Kylie Khan speaking. The email I received talking about actions the 14th of March, and here it says, please note tomorrow ELAC will act on two decisions. So tomorrow is the 15th.
It's the same subject.
That was the issue that Olivier raised.
Yeah, right.
The message was sent today by mistake because I had not approved it. And I approved it without noticing that. Evan sent it without noticing that. We beg your forgiveness.
But
and we could continue talking about this for a long time. Either we defer the decision till tomorrow or we make it now.
Are we in a hurry to make the decision today? Cannot wait till tomorrow?
Just that we have a slot on today's agenda, which is rapidly going away. That was Alan Greenberg. I'm taking an executive decision. We are not taking these actions today. We will take them tomorrow. We go on to the next item. Next item is GDPR discussions. Can we have the GDPR document on the screen, page 34? Alan Greenberg speaking. I will call for people in a moment. There have been significant discussions at ICANN about the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulations. As I presume you know at this point, ICANN has published the model which they are proposing that we use and have asked for feedback. They have asked for feedback preferably by the end of this meeting. We will not likely give that feedback by the end of this meeting, but I would like to take this opportunity to have a face-to-face discussion for a little while until Leon comes so that we start getting a feel. We will continue this electronically and make a decision, I hope, within a week, because if we wait much longer, it has much less value. I'd like to set some ground rules, however, for the discussion. The discussion is whether the ALAC believes that this is a good model from a user perspective. We will not discuss whether we think the data commissioners will accept it or not. We have asked the data commissioners, and hopefully they will come up with an answer. So we are not judging ICANN's rationale for doing this. Just to what extent we believe this serves user needs or does not serve user needs. Users do include registrants, and we have taken the position before, and although we can reopen it now, the position we have taken earlier within the ALAC over a many-year period is we care about registrants. Individual registrants are individual users. In the relatively rare case that the interests of registrants are opposed to the interest of end users. End users, we count them, and there are several billion end users. There are tens or hundreds of millions of GTLD registrants. We don't actually know how many. We know how many domains there are, but not how many registrants there are. And the user interests predominate. That is an established position of the ALAC. And although the ALAC can always change their position, that is the one we're working with unless there's a request to explicitly change it. So if I have agreement on the ground rules, I'll open the floor to any general discussions before we start looking at the individual points within the GDPR. Olivier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So two points, one procedural and one on the contents of the document itself. The procedural one being that currently we have the document on the screen, which is not scrolled to the page that you asked for, but it would be helpful if we had a link to that document so we could download it on our respective computers. May I suggest that the ALAC Skype chat might be a good channel for sharing that link? I can't see it on the Skype. Can't find it. Oh, the request is already on the Skype. Well, this is to the record. Now, secondly, on the actual contents of the document itself, I understand this is a working document. I am, and quite seriously, a bit concerned about the names which have been given to the document. If you will have noticed, at the beginning it says the cookbook. Further down, I think there might be a I don't know whether further down there's an allusion to a calzone or something. I'm not quite sure this is, given the status of the document itself as being particularly important. It's a great way to describe a document as a cookbook.
Sorry. Your comment is you believe they have named the document irreverently, or... I'm not quite sure what you're saying.
Well, it's a serious discussion we're having.
It is.
So I'm just noting that I'm a little surprised by the names given to the different parts of the discussion.
Okay. I will comment that the vast majority of comments I've heard, people think it's rather apt. A proposal for a tiered access accreditation period was called appropriate in Italian dessert. I really don't want to spend time debating whether they were sufficiently serious enough and naming these the document or the model. If we can do that later tonight over the music. Any further comments? We have several comments. We have Tijani and Sebastian.
Thank you, Alan. Tijani speaking. First of all, concerning the name, the cookbook is not the name of the document. The cookbook includes several things. One of them is the interim model. Coming back to now, you said, is it a good document for the end users? I would like first to say that I understand very well the position of those who wrote it. I listened to them several times, and I know that they are between several interests, so the community pushed them to have this kind of document. If I am speaking about the interest of end users, I say no, because first, the collection of the data is at its maximum, the thick data, which is not, in my point of view, in the interest of the end user. The second point is the storage of this data in several points. And the third point, I am not sure about it because we don't have clarification about it. It's the accreditation. So the document in general is not really in the interest of the end user, but I understand and I know that they cannot make better than that.
I'm not sure that everyone in this room has read every bit of this document and has studied it. My intent was to go through the individual points and try to assess it. If this group wants to start into a general discussion, identifying the points you know without full knowledge that everyone else knows what you're talking about, we certainly can. But I would have not thought that that was the best way to go forward. We have about a half an hour before Leon arrives. Sebastian.
Thank you. Now that you explain what is the process you want to go, then I will be very short. I don't think that it's a good idea that the chef always ask somebody outside how to cook. Therefore, the article, the G19 or 29, must not be asked for everything. We need to make a decision, and that's not a good idea, to give them idea how to expand their remit. I know that you don't understand, but I try to detail it in English. But go ahead with your process. I think it will be the better, and I will come back on that eventually personally with you.
I think you were saying we shouldn't come up with a model. We should let the people who are experts in it do it.
No, I say it's not a good idea for Joran to put names, to go each time he have a question, to go to the G19. It's a very bad idea because each question will raise an issue for them and they will say, oh, that's a good idea. I will extend, or no, it's not a good idea, and therefore we need to have a decision by our organization and not going to outside, even if it's a G29. Sorry.
Thank you. Hadja.
Hadja Mignoy, for the record. First, I agree that we need to go through the document in details before we start the discussion. Second, I just wanted to have a quick response to Tijani, where he said it's not in the interest of the end user to collect the data. Well, we could go on arguing this forever. I could say it is, for example, in the interest of the end user because it does protect the end user. It's a kind of protection because consumers, it's a way of seeing legitimate websites and legitimate shops. Anyway, it's a debate. I don't know if we should go through it, and I don't think we should. But, yeah, I would like to go, as Alan said, and first examine the document or look at it.
When we get to that particular item, Tijani can tell us in very succinct, short words why he believes it's not in the interest of users. May we start? Jonathan.
My question's about the framework of the discussion itself, which seems like the time to say that. Right now we're trying to figure out whether or not they've come up with a valuable interim document for their own compliance with a regulation coming out of Europe. So I guess it's my recommendation that we not get embroiled in a discussion about absolutes, about what makes good privacy policy or not, but instead figure out if this document is practical and functional in the near term. Not whether it'll be accepted necessarily, but I mean, whether it's, you know, implementable or causes great problems in the, because it's meant to be an interim document that's going to become a PDP to have more extended conversations about where ICANN is on these issues, where the community is.
Thank you. I think that's all we're doing. We are not pretending this is permanent. We do not know if the data commissioners will accept it. We know that the interpretation is in flux right now for a number of reasons. All we're saying is if it were to be accepted, do we believe we should support it? And that's, I think, the general tone of it. All right. Sorry, we need to scroll down a little bit. That's where the model starts. Okay. If we can scroll down to the bottom of that page. Okay. The first substantive section is the purposes of processing. They list a number of purposes. Those will be accepted or not accepted by the policy commissioners. Those are the ones we're claiming are the purposes. I don't think we need to debate it because that, again, comes into what will be accepted or not. Scroll down to the next section after 2.7.1. Keep going to the next subsection. That's it, 2.2. What data must be collected by the registrars at time of registration? Now, this model says collect everything we currently collect. Okay. Tijani has raised the point of this is not good for users. Why does it matter to users what is collected? That information collected may or may not be displayable. Why does it matter to users what registrant data is collected?
Because if Tijani speaking, because if you collect data that are not necessary for the purpose of the collection, you are taking data of persons of users that you don't have the right to have, there is no need of them. You will tell me why you say that. I will tell you because when we spoke about thick and thin, who is Alan? It was decided that the registry will take only the thin whois. That means that there are data inside the thick whois that shouldn't go to the registry.
Okay. I'm not sure why that affects the billions of users in the world as opposed to the registrants. And I believe your statement saying it is not needed is a judgment on whether the privacy officers will consider our reasons for saying it's needed as valid or not. Okay, please, Jonathan.
Thanks, Alan. Jonathan Zook, for the record. I guess I go back to the same thing. That's the status quo today, and so the other objective here has got to be to figure out the smoothest transition into this interim mechanism as well. And so it's not like there's some brand new proposal being made about the collection of data and using GDPR as an excuse to do it. I mean, this is the data that's being collected today.
Hadja.
Hadja Minyawi for the record. I just wanted to say that it's not possible to collect data that's not needed because according to the GDPR, you only collect data for the purpose needed. So it's not possible. So let's not argue is the data required or not because it will not be possible under the current GDPR to collect data that is not required.
And it will be a judgment of the data commissioners whether they agree that our rationale for requiring it is justified or not. So I think that falls under the category of things that we said we're not going to debate. Tijani, would you like any further word before we go on?
Just to say, how do you know that it will be compliant with GDPR?
We don't. It has been submitted to... If the privacy officers come back and say it is not compliant, we will have to do something because we cannot request that our contracted parties do something where the privacy commissioners have already said it's not compliant and everyone will be fined huge amounts of money. So whatever we write will be changed if they definitively say it is not accepted. That's a given. John.
So a question going back a bit. So on the thick versus thin who is. Did ALAC issue a position statement on that issue?
I believe we were strongly in favor of everything being thick.
Oh, okay, thank you.
That time, the world has changed, but I believe we were strongly in support of changing .com and .net and .jobs to conform with what everyone else was doing and not have to rely on registrars to preserve the data. For better or worse, we did support that. Now, we may find because of data transmission rules, we can no longer do that, and the world will have to change. The board did halt the implementation of the thick whois for that very reason.
John Laprise, for the record again. I just wanted to see what the precedent was from us. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments? Daniel.
Speaking French, yeah, okay.
You're not Daniel.
No, sir. I'll teach you.
My eyes are not working very well today.
Yeah, it's Abdul Jalil, yeah.
Yeah, I'm Abdul Jalil.
No.
My question actually requires a bit of a clarification. When you speak of data here, is it data for those who have already paid for their domain name, or is this law going to be applicable to... new domain names exclusively. So as a new user, I want to register a name under the .com. I would like to know whether this is for the data of all the users who have already purchased, already registered a domain name, or only for new users, because he's speaking of transfer. So I would like to ask you for a clarification there.
All domains. All of them. Several hundred million as of today. We have John. My impression is that with the exception of Tijani, most people believe that we should not be commenting on this at this point, because it is up to the data commissioners to tell us whether we're crazy or whether we're appropriate, and that will be acted on. Sure, why not? Bastian.
Thank you. Bastian speaking. Leaving my personal opinion aside, what I do think, I agree with Tijani, and that's purely based on my, it's not necessarily an educated guess, but whether we're going to be compliant if we follow this particular model and looking at collecting the full WHOIS data. So, and if we, it's not only a matter of waiting for the data protection authorities to tell us whether that's the case or not. Like, timelines are very, very short. So if we can actually, okay, the law is not there yet, so what it turns out to be in practice, we don't really know. But if we can make it rather an educated guess, like, what is it going to be like, then this is not going to be compliant. So I wouldn't wait for the data protection authorities to tell us so.
The ground rules of this discussion established before you came in were: we are not going to debate what the data commissioners will accept or not. We are looking at this from a point of view of end users, assuming the data commissioners accept what has been presented by ICANN. Is this a reasonable model from a user perspective? Not a registrant perspective, a user perspective. Go ahead.
Well, in that case, I will not comment any longer on that then, but just as for your information, I think the discussion with regard to user interests, etc., that we should leave that to the PDP, and this is about being compliant. So I would like to separate the two.
I don't think we can ever ignore what is in the user's interest. I have the real Daniel next, and then I have Tijani, I believe, and then I have either Sarah or Olivier. I cannot see whose card is hidden behind a water bottle.
It's Olivier's card.
Okay, thank you.
It's Daniel for the record. One thing is, we have to put into consideration the limitation of time right now. We are time limited to go through all this review. So I think we should proceed with the compliance and also leave the genius, the RDS working group, because it's also doing some awesome work. Because at a later stage, we shall be discussing all these requirements and the use cases. Thank you.
Tijani.
It's exactly, we are talking about the compliance with, this is about GDPR. So it is not about the new generation RDS. We have a simple proof. We don't have to make a lot of effort to say that the thick WHOIS is not needed for the registries. So if you give a party data that is not needed for the purpose of the work, you are violating the simple rule of privacy. That's why I say that the end users will be harmed if this happens.
One of the parts we skipped, and maybe we shouldn't have, is the reason for collecting that ICANN has presented. They did an analysis. They asked for use cases. Remember, the ALAC was part of the groups that put in use cases. And they looked at the use cases developed by the overall community and found that every element that is currently in the thick WHOIS is used by some people for what they believe are valid reasons. That you can debate whether they added up the numbers in the spreadsheet correctly or not. I'm willing to take it that they did. And that is the rationale that is provided. That is not why did we build Whois in 1973, but today how is Whois being used? And ICANN is taking the position that any part of the community that was in their mind validly using the data is a good enough rationale to collect it. That doesn't mean everyone can get it eventually, but it has to be collected if anyone can get it. That was the rationale. Again, it may be acceptable by data commissioners, it may not. And if not, we're going to have to adjust it because we clearly are not going to do something that the data commissioners have said they're going to fight. So that was the rationale that it was collected, not whether the registry alone needs it, but whether any part of the community needs that those elements. And law enforcement, among other people, have said those elements are useful in their use of the data. Further discussion? Olivier.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I think that the points which are made regarding the thick Whois versus thin Whois is a battle that's already passed. The decision was made by ICANN with the thick Whois report that was published last year, I believe, that all GTLD registrations would need to follow a thick Whois model. So looking at the interim plan that we have there, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I've reread through it, it looks as though what we are doing with regards to thick versus thin, or with regards to the quantity of information that is collected, is a status quo. There is no change to the quantity of information that is being collected, and there would be changes to the access to that information. But so I wonder why we would be, with the ALAC would say that they would be against the status quo.
That's why I skipped over that section initially, but clearly we are not. We are now almost 20 minutes into our 30-minute discussion, and we have not effectively started to get to the first item yet. We will continue this on email, but I thought it would have been good to have a substantive discussion on the real parts of this proposal before we left town. I have Daniel in the queue.
Daniel, for the record. I still stand with the position that the data collection should remain constant with the thick Whois, and then wait for the recommendations to come in from the other side. Thank you.
What other side are you talking about? Sorry.
That is the data controllers.
Again, that was the premise of this discussion, which we have not followed. Christopher.
Thank you, Alan. Christopher Wilkinson, I don't know whether we're having a transcript now, but I think the key area from the point of view of the final user is, and particularly the registrants, is first of all, given thick Whois, the security with which the thick Whois database is kept, including escrow, because we know from bitter experience that from time to time, vast databases can be hacked and stolen, and the loss of such databases to malicious parties would be quite dramatic. And the second area which we need to look at from the point of view of the user is the is this business of accreditation. Who is going to be accredited, and for what purposes are they allowed to use the data that they acquire by virtue of their accreditation? And there we've heard two extremes. One is basically that law enforcement would be accredited, and the other extreme is that almost everybody who is currently downloading individual or bulk data from Whois would be able to continue to do so for whatever their purposes are. And we have heard descriptions of purposes, which some of which led me to raise my eyebrows. So I think those two points need to be emphasized. The first of all, the security of the storage, because I agree that we are in a...
Thank you. I'll point out, earlier in this discussion, we decided that no one objected to keep on using the standard ALAC premise that if registrant rights are in conflict with users, we take precedent on users, not in this case the privacy issues. And second of all, that we're trying to do this section by section. I'll note that we're 9 minutes from the end. We've spent 21 minutes. We have not gotten anywhere into this document. Anyone else like to speak? Hadja.
Hadia Minyai, for the record. It's a quick one. I just wanted to say, so what if we decide now to say this is too much data collected, we don't want this, then will we come with another proposal? Do we have time to debate? I think this part, it's already over, and it's, as mentioned before, it's now up to them to say if the collected data is actually as required by the purpose or not.
I thought that was a premise of this discussion. Section 7.2.3, what data must be transferred to the registry? The answer is currently, according to Thick Who Is premises, again, due to data transfer regulations, this may be considered invalid. We're not considering that aspect of it today. Next point, what data must registrars and registries transfer to escrow agents? Same answer. How long must data be retained by registrars, registry, and data escrow? No new retention requirements are required. That is, the ones that stand right now are the ones that we are recommending. They may well be objected to by the data commissioners and say we have to shorten them at least for European, according to European. Remember, this whole model only applies if the registrar has a European presence or the registrant has a European presence. However, the registrar may choose to apply it in a wider range than that. Sorry, now I'm causing the feedback. Hadja, please go ahead.
It's a quick question. So so in case the registrar or the registrants are not do not belong to the European area, that means that there will the original who is going to be used, and that means that there are two parallel models will be used in parallel.
This model applies only to European registrars and European registrants, for all intents and purposes. The registrar, any registrar resident anywhere, may choose to apply it any wider scale than that. So it's judgment call. If you do not have a presence in Europe, you could do business as usual today, or you could apply this model. Your judgment.
Yes, I know. And that means that two models will exist. The interim model will exist, and the other model will exist for those people who actually will not follow this model.
That is correct. This model applies potentially to a subset of registrants. The model is the same for all intents and purposes. It's just what can you end up displaying? So, again, we're looking at it from the point of view of users. Daniel,
for the record, what about in case something else that looks a little bit similar to GDPR comes from another region? Is it going to require setting up of a new model such that we keep on having multiple models based on every region?
We are focusing right now on GDPR. It is likely that there are privacy models in 100 other countries that are slightly different. I am presuming that we will ultimately ensure that whatever we end up with will be sufficiently table-driven so that it can be tailored to the rules of somewhere else. We are focusing on GDPR today. Tijani.
If we say that everything that we are looking for the answer of the data commissioner, we don't have to discuss it, so we will not discuss anything because everything is there. So I don't know. And Hadia said, if we don't accept it, then it means do we have time? In this case, we don't discuss anything, and that's all. I come back to the storage. Why give the thick whiz to the registries? Or to the escrow agent? For me, those two are against the interest of the end user.
I would like you to explain why it is against the interest of the end user.
I will tell you. We need it in one single point. Why do you want to spread it? We need it in a single point. If we need data for I don't know law enforcement for we don't need to have cyber crime, etc. So we need some data. We need them in one point. Why do you want to distribute them? If you distribute them, the risk of leakage will be greater. So when we say it is not public, it is not right.
I believe Olivier or somebody suggested that since we've already decided that Thick Whois was the preferred method for ALAC, that we adhere to it, and the ICANN principles that they started with saying we should make as few changes as possible to go forward with this interim compliance model. Now, let me finish, please. I know you really want to push the button. ICANN started doing escrow a long time ago because registries and registrars sometimes go belly up, I think is the expression. We have had cases where a registrar basically disappeared, gone. If we hadn't had escrow data, all of those registrants would have been erased. So we do escrow for, I believe, very valid reasons. Why did we agree that Thick Whois was better than Thin Whois? And that decision was made, by the way, in 2002 in the first round of new GTLDs, where all new GTLDs going back to there were Thick Whois. And the rationale was we trust the registry better than the individual registrars, some of whom may or may not be maintaining the data. That was the rationale. I'm not going to debate it. So that was the rationale, and that was the rationale why the PDP 3 years ago recommended Thick Whois for the remaining registries. And we have a speaker queue of Christopher and then Jonathan.
Thanks, Alan. Jonathan Zook for the record. Maybe I can suggest a path forward in this conversation. Maybe the first question to ask is, what, if anything, this interim solution does to change the circumstances of end users, and is that change harmful, as opposed to using this as an opportunity to relitigate things from before? In other words, what in this interim solution amounts to a delta, and then let's look at those delta situations and see whether or not they cause harm over the status quo from to end users. That might narrow down the conversation a little bit.
To answer a question Tijani asked a little while ago of why are we doing this, if every answer is we'll wait for the data commissioners, because if we've gotten far enough down in the list, there were items that some of us anyway believe were not done correctly from the point of view of end users. We haven't gotten that far. Leon is here. This conversation is over. We'll be continuing it electronically. Leon, wherever you are. I'd like to welcome Leon Sanchez, the board member selected by at large.
Thank you, Alan.
We have no set agenda other than Leon to either present to us whatever he wants to present to us, ask us whatever he'd like to ask us, or we can just smile at each other for a half an hour.
We can go for drinks. No, thank you. Thank you for having me here again. As we usually do, we have had a very busy week, very busy meeting. And, well, you could wonder which are the main topics on the agenda, GDPR, right? GDPR, in the case of at large, the review. And I would like to get your feedback on the session that we had between the board and the ALEC. I think it was a dynamic session. It was a fruitful session, at least in my view. But I would like to know where we can improve, how we can improve, and of course start this conversation, as you said, with no preset agenda. And if you have any comments or questions you would like to do to me, I'm obviously open.
Leon's question on how did the board ALEC meeting go, in your impression. I'll let other people speak before I give my comments. Jonathan.
Thanks, and thanks for joining the meeting here, Leon. I thought the meeting went pretty well with the board, but obviously the conversation was dominated about the budget and cuts and various programs that would affect the at-large. And I attended the budget meeting as well that Xavier led. And I think what is causing a little bit of the disconnect between the community and the budget process was the rationale used. In other words, there's an umbrella rationale that was used, but the weighing of interest that took place on specific programs about why this program made it in or didn't, or why this program got cut rather than this one, that conversation had to have taken place, or criteria had to be used. And bringing that to the surface, I think, would help make people either understand or have a basis for having a discussion about the cuts that have obviously raised some concerns within the at-large community.
Thanks, Jonathan. And I agree. I mean, when we see cuts and we don't actually see where they came from or why they came to be, it's like just puzzling and brings a lot of uncertainty to people whose budget is actually being cut, I think. What would you think, and this is, of course, an open question for everyone, there are two questions.
Are we going on to a budget discussion, or are we still on the board?
This is still on the budget discussion.
Well, I thought we were on the discussion. Board discussion of the board meeting.
Yes. Well, just if we can log these two questions so I don't forget them.
Okay. One is, no. We can go deep down and stay on the budget, and then go back to the board meeting if people like.
Yeah. Just two ideas again. The one about having a longer process to develop the budget. You know, Jern spoke about a 2 years process in order to develop the budget, which in turn would have a broader participation and far more information and deeper involvement from the community in shaping the budget. That is one end. And the other one is about the streamlining of the reviews, of the organizational reviews and the specific reviews. As you might have heard, we have 11 reviews which have to go according to bylaws in some time, and we're getting our hands full of reviews. And, of course, this implies not only resources, but also a lot of volunteer time and a lot of volunteer resources as well. So just don't let me go if we don't comment on these two aspects as well. But yes, you are right, Alan. We are discussing the board meeting and the ALEC meeting.
I do have comments, and I'm sure other people have comments on the budget, perhaps that have not been said, in certainly in this venue. On the board meeting, I found it rather productive. I was rather... I don't know what the right word is, chagrined or something, that we did to go into a budget discussion when we had, I believe, decided to not have a budget discussion there, that it would not reflect well on the ALEC if we again went to the board and said money, money, money. But we did have that discussion. It went into it. It was an interesting one. I don't think we prepared our answers sufficiently for the question answer to the board question. We did it in a short period of time in our opening session. I don't believe that ended up being adequate. And the questions we posed to the board Again, we ended up with one question. A second one I contributed because Heidi told me we had to have two, and I had three more minutes to do one. We have to take this more seriously if indeed these meetings are productive. And as I said in my closing remarks, those meetings were not only useless, were damaging for a number of years. They are much better now, but I think we need to do the job somewhat better in terms of the board meetings. And said, if we now want to go on to the, we wanted to talk about budget, I believe. Anyone further comments on the board meeting? Not the substance of what we discussed, but the overall tone and format. John, please go ahead.
John LaPrise for the record. So I thought the board meeting was very good. My only disappointment was that, so I happened to be in the room for the prior board meeting. Shireen's comments were canned. He made basically the same statement to the previous group, and I would have hoped, and I recognize the importance of, he's got the position with respect to the budget is he's talking, he's saying the same things to all the groups because that's the way it is in the current budget situation. I would have hoped for something a little bit more tailored, I guess, and maybe that's a style issue for me, but I was mildly disappointed that it was the same response I was hearing and wasn't so particular to at large. Thank you.
Just for the record, you will find that in meetings such as that and one-on-one meetings with either the chair of the board or the CEO, you will likely get their canned remarks that they're sprinkling to everyone one by one. One-on-ones with the chair is not the board is not that. That is not the case. But with the CEO and in any public meeting with either of them, that's what you're going to get. Tijani?
Budget. Just one final reminder.
We're still finishing the board.
So in terms of the format and how it actually went, nothing to improve?
My only comment would be that the introductory comments should not take a third of the meeting.
Okay.
Unless you want me or whoever's chair at the time to also take another third with introductory comments.
No, that's very useful.
Maureen.
That's very useful.
Maureen.
Just in response to your question about, you know, how we felt the meeting had gone, with respect to the questions that I asked, which were off the cuff, I felt that he responded, even though, John, as I'm sure, it was the same sort of thing. I felt that it did address you know, at least some of the things that I actually raised. Thank you.
Budget discussion, taking a cue. Tijani.
Thank you very much. You spoke about 2 years budget. I think this is a good thing, and even we can make even more than 2 years, but it would be in parallel with the yearly budget because the longer the period is, the less accurate the budget will be. So we need the long-term budget to propagate I don't know how to say it in English, on a longer period, but we need a budget of 1 year to work on it for the year.
Okay. I guess that Jorin's suggestion is that we make the crafting of the one-year budget a two-year period so that everyone is able to actually drill down each line and each project, and everyone is able to go into details as to why, what, and how it is being proposed. Not only cuts, but also expenditures, etc. So that is how I understand what Joran is suggesting. So we wouldn't be building a two-year budget, but we would be taking 2 years to develop the year budget.
Okay, I'm next in the queue. I understood something rather different. Shireen has already said that when we do a five-year strategic plan and then a five-year operational plan, we will cost it out. So at some level, that's a budget. It's not quite a line item budget.
Yeah, I agree, but I think
okay. No.
My understanding is that these are two parallel.
Yes, I agree. I'm saying we are looking at a longer term budget. My understanding of what Yaron was saying is we currently have a 15 month cycle to develop a 1 year budget because of factoring in the IANA part of it ahead of time. We spent an immense amount of time doing, staff spends an immense amount of time doing it. We're not just talking to finance staff. It goes all the way down to staff, all the way up. Departments submit their budgets. You go through a whole planning process. It takes an immense amount of effort on the volunteer community when these budgets come up. I believe what he was proposing is that instead of doing a 12-month budget, we do a 24-month budget. It presumably will still take 15 months to develop, but we're not starting the next one before we finish the first one. And that was my understanding from a number of discussions with Yaron. I may be wrong, but that was my understanding.
I think the best would be to ask Yaron directly, but because yes, my understanding is the other way around, as I said, to take 2 years to develop the one-year budget. Yes.
That I don't understand. Two years to develop the 1 year budget.
Yes, for
that
example.
That means at any given time we're developing three budgets.
If we're talking about fiscal year 22, we would take 2 years. That is June 2022. And please bear with me, I'm not good with numbers. Fiscal year 22, that would be June 2022. So we would be developing that budget from June 2020.
We need a clarification. If that's what we're doing, I'm stopping to work with ICANN at all because that doubles the amount of work instead of having it. We have a queue, but I was still in the queue, I think. But I will note.
But yes, we do need clarification on that.
And Tijani. And okay. I have after me Olivier, Maureen, and Tijani. In terms of the existing budget and the problems we had this time, what I see specifically in our, quote, outreach problem is we had three different departments each deciding to cut their respective part that helped contribute to our outreach. That is crop, additional budget requests, and travel. And they fed up, and no one tried to look at them as a whole and judge whether, in fact, that made a lot of sense. Because each department was told, you have to cut a certain percentage. That's the way I read it. And I think that indicates a real problem. It also indicates that there's an awful lot of discussion going on about this. When you look at the mismatch of the words that went along with the travel slots and the table, where they had clearly made a decision at the last moment, change one thing and not the other. There's lots of discussion going on. Why it all has to be done in secret within staff without a little bit of feedback and give and take, I'm not quite sure, but I would like to see that changed.
And lastly,
the fact that the crop change was made without any notice and without any alert to it, hoping perhaps, whether no one thought to mention it or whether it was deliberately omitted so we hope no one would notice it, either way, not good. Leon would like a rebuttal or something like that,
then we go on. Just to follow on the same issue of the two-year process to develop the one-year budget, I think that it is meant, or the suggestion is meant to address exactly what you were saying, that nowhere knows how these cuts came to be or where did it come from. So my understanding is that through this two-year process, then the community would have an opportunity to deep dive into the budgeting process and to ask all the questions and, of course, have this interaction with staff as to the proposals that would be affected in any way.
Let's not debate our interpretation of what Joran means. We'll ask him. Next in the queue, we have Olivier.
Thank you very much, Alain. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking. And if we're speaking about a multi-year budget, which is the two-year budget being put together, I think that the ELAC is on record for many years for asking for a multi-year budget to take place or to be set up, but was told in the past that this was impossible. So if it's possible now, I would imagine the ELAC would embrace this. On the topic of the slashing of outreach, etc., thank you for the explanation. That makes sense. We were given further information, we as in the RELO chairs had a FICA, F-I-K-A, with Joran a little earlier today, and we're given details that, in fact, some departments, other departments, also reduced their costs greatly, including on the staff side. But this doesn't appear to have been communicated very well. So it might well be that there is a communication problem here. That's part of the problem. So I'm as you know, I was a little upset and did tell this to the board and said there needs to be more fairness across all of ICANN, but it appears that some of it is due to communication. Thank you.
Thanks, Olivier, and I completely agree with you. I personally have been very vocal about the fact that we are not communicating what is being done to evenly distribute the cuts and the savings across the organization, not only impacting the community, but also, of course, impacting the board and impacting the staff. So I'm on the same line as you. We need to be better at communicating that.
Just Olivier, to clarify, if indeed my interpretation is correct on the two-year budget, that means we would do fiscal year 20 and 21 at the same time, and then 22, 23. So that crosses some boundaries, but not others. If Leon is correct, I think it means we're doing two or three years every year, and I'm not quite sure what that means at all. So next
let's not
Maureen.
The equation.
Thank you, Alan. It's Maureen for the record. I don't know. Maybe I've got it wrong, but when we've had the board person come to the ALAC, we've allowed the board person to give their update before we start bombarding him with him or her with sort of questions and queries. And I don't think we've given Leon a chance to tell us about how he's experiencing, you know, like what he's experiencing as in his role as a board member. But I know that, you know, we've got things that we're concerned about, and this session is really for him to talk to us and for us to talk to him, rather than sort of like analysing what Joran said in his message. So I'd just like to make that comment. Thank you.
I'd be glad to turn this over to Leon. I thought he came in and said, I'd like to open it up to the floor of what you have to say. So he chose not to give us an update, which
I
have
think
limited time, and it's a matter of priorities. But Leon?
I think it's a beginner's thing, right? if you're asking me what my experience has been so far, Maureen, I can tell you that it's been a very rewarding experience as working in any other part of the community. It's been an eye-opener to many issues. I mean, when you are in the board, you get to see things from different perspectives. But the good thing is that you also bring in the perspective from where you come from, right? So having this mix of views actually helps a lot to take better decisions and make better choices for the good of the organization and the community. So, I couldn't tell you much more. It's, you know how I am. I like to dive into details really quickly. I like to make contributions on a regular basis, and so far all my board colleagues have been very welcoming, very eager to reach out and to help and to actually discuss things in a meaningful way. And I think that is one of the things that has struck me as more surprisingly, because sometimes when you are outside the board, you would think that the board only rubber stamps issues, right? It's like all in favor say yay, all in favor say nay, that you raise hands and that's it, right? But it isn't like that at all. I mean, we do have very heated discussions sometimes for many issues. And what I like about this is that no matter how heated the discussion can get, it is always a constructive dialogue. It's always something that happens in a very collegial way, in a very amicable way. So that actually brings me to the point in which I was telling you that you get to see things from a very different perspective, and it actually lets you know that those who are on the board are also part of the community and are also human. So it's been a very good experience.
Just one extra question. So apart from GDPR and the KSK rollover and the budget, what other things have you discussed, been talking about?
Well, we talk about many things, of course. I mean, me in particular, I'm involved with the OEC, with the Organizational Effectiveness Committee. So all the review processes that are happening have to go through the OEC. We read the reviews. We, of course, discuss the reviews, the recommendations that are being made, and we actually have these discussions. Like, for example, in the at-large review, I can tell you that the discussions have been, the review working party won't let me say otherwise. The discussions have been heated, and I can tell you that board members of the OEC have had a look at the review process of the at-large community in very much the same way that those part of the at-large review working party have seen it. I mean, there is this sentiment that some of the reviewers, however capable and however recognized they might be in their professional field, they might not be the best to actually carry the different reviews. We are seeing that many reviews are being or causing some kind of itch in the reviewed community. It's not only the at-large community. So there is a trend there, and we need to be better at that. So that is an example of what are the kind of issues that we discuss. I'm also part of the Accountability Mechanisms Committee, and of course all the IRPs and all the reconsideration processes go through the BAMC, so we actually look at all the documents that are attached to any complaints or to any process. In that way, I cannot go further into details, because of course this could affect any of the processes that we're looking into. But you get to see all the string from when a certain complaint is raised to when the board actually resolves that it needs to be taken care of in this or that way. So those are the kind of issues that.
If I may try to take the meeting back, I suggest the two of you may want to talk over a drink.
Drink's always good.
We have Tijani, who's still in the queue on, well, not yet. Tijani, who's still on the queue,
yes,
on budget.
Yes. Yes.
Leon did ask us to talk about reviews, and we have 5 minutes left for the whole meeting.
Go ahead, please.
Tijani, please.
Go ahead, please.
Okay. Christopher, I'm not sure which topic you were wanted to talk on, but I'd like to give it to Leon to talk about refuse, to introduce the issue in not less than a minute, or not more than a minute, and so we can get some input before we have to adjourn. Some other people do have commitments at this point.
So the issue about reviews is that we have a lot of reviews to actually carry out, and we have our hands full with reviews, and we have everyone's hands full with reviews. So the question here is, how can we find a process to properly or adequately streamline these reviews so that instead of carrying out 9 reviews in 1 year, we are able to distribute this workload in, let's say, 2 reviews yearly. So in this time span of 5 years, we are able to carry out all the reviews that are bylaws mandate.
Thank you. I'm first in the queue because I put my card up when you first mentioned the issue. I think Joran's statement that we are going into 9 reviews in the coming year is accurate, but not necessarily relevant. 7 of those reviews are already started with budgets committed and contracts made in the case of the organizational reviews. Some of them are almost finished. So it is a fact, but there are only 2 reviews that we have at all discretionary at this point, and that's ATRT and the CCNSO organizational review. These 2 are the last of the sequence of reviews. We don't start again until another 3 years or so, when we start the GNSO over again. And, you know, so it's, we have a hiatus period. It's automatically built in. We have no choice. If we do not, during that process, decide on how we're going to do organizational reviews to not waste so much time and money, then we've made a decision that we like what we're doing. If we do not change the bylaws for the specific reviews to, number one, give the board some discretion, as they had before, and number two, change the sequence. If we started all 5 specific reviews in sequence here, we're going to start them again in 5 years. So we have to change the rules so we can spread them out. You know, and giving board discretion may automatically do that. So we wrote rules that forced us to do this. No one thought about the implications of it. We've learned the lesson hard, bad. And we now have a quiet period of several years that if we're smart, we will do something about it and make sure we don't repeat this again. So let's be honest about where we are, and we do have the ability to make a change. We have to actually do it.
I agree, and that is why I'm asking the question now, because I don't want to ask this question when we are with everything on us again.
The only good thing is I won't be here in this seat to answer the question again. But I think I've given my opinion personally. I don't know what anyone else's are. Open the floor.
I think Tijani wanted to say something.
I cannot agree more with Alan. Really. Because this kind of doing the reviews will make us doing reviews continuously, and I am not sure it is efficient and it is cost effective. So having the period between two reviews should be the period between the end of the first review and the beginning of the second review.
I should point out that the review done by items, as it turns out, of the ASO, apparently the ASO is happy with it. I know of no organizational reviews that we have done in the history of ICANN that I've been aware of which have really been effective. Maybe it's just my opinion. We have John and Christopher, and 1 minute to go.
So I just want to comment that, sorry, John LaPrise for the record. Having been an external reviewer for other organizations, I don't know what process was used to perform due diligence on the reviewers for ICANN, but given the experience with the current review, I recommend looking at those processes in terms of due diligence. I have lots of issues I can talk about offline that I – these there are issues there, and I don't know how the situation ended up being the way it did. So
I'll give you a 30-second answer after Christopher.
Christopher Wilkinson. On the reviews, just to communicate a non-frivolous contribution in the front of the GNSO Council earlier today, each review should take 3 days. And that this business of having, by implication, this business of having expensive external contracts to achieve, as Alan has indicated, very little, should stop. On the budget, I have a lot to say, but there isn't time. In agreement with Javier, we have a session tomorrow morning, don't we?
We have a session on a different subject.
Yes. Javier and I would like to follow up on your idea of having an at-large panel to review the development of the geographical names issue.
We'll see if we can fit that in.
5 minutes.
To answer John's question, we explicitly asked to be part of the review, not in the decision, a part of the evaluation of the applicants, not to be part of the decision making, but to specifically make comments. We were given redacted versions of the applications, minus names or anything else that it could identify with them. I personally objected because I too have been a reviewer many times and an applicant many times more, and I know how these bids are written. As it turned out, our comments on the redacted versions, we ended up selecting items also. And a comment of someone who I will not quote from ICANN staff is, you wouldn't have wanted to see the others.
So I guess
maybe one of the others would have worked out better. We're never going to know. We're not going to repeat it.
So we need to do a review of the reviews.
Last comments, Leon.
No, I just want to thank you for this time with you and for listening to me, for providing me your feedback, and of course, as I've always said, I remain open and close to you, and feel free to reach out to me. Sorry, anytime. I'm a click away, so thanks.
Thank you, Leon. We reconvene when?
Tomorrow.
I know that. 10:30 tomorrow. In this room, hopefully on time, although I'm only talking to a third of the people. Thank you very much. Thank you to our technical staff. Thank you to our at-large staff. And thank you very much to our interpretation staff. Appreciate you bearing with us all. Thank you.
The meeting is adjourned. I'd just like to note that tomorrow morning at 8:30 in this room, we have the At-Large Capacity Building Working Group, 8:30 to 9:30. And also, for those who haven't met Andrea Glandon yet, she is sitting here, and I'd like to introduce her. She'll be joining, as she is already part of the At-Large support team. And if we can just go around the table, this is not on record, just to say your names, and then she'll know what you look like. Welcome, Andrea.
Alan Greenberg.